This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Where I question whether or not it will be a big deal is that the kind of problems that the Boston Celtics had, does Kemba Walker resolve that? Because I don't view Kyrie as being the problem.
Kyrie was the problem. I don't care even if the players think it was Gordon Hayward. They're wrong. And the proof in the pudding is when Kyrie was on and off the court, the way the team operated. So, like, if that's the young players' fault because they needed to get on the same page, whatever. I don't care about whose fault it is. I know drop Kyrie in, they get worse. Take Kyrie out, they get better.
All right, so that's Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith debating who is the problem with the Boston Celtics. Number is 617-779-7937. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I tend to agree with Max Kellerman more so than Stephen A. Smith. I never thought I'd say I agree with something Max Kellerman saying, but Kyrie Irving was definitely the problem. I think everybody would acknowledge that. And it's not just because Kyrie Irving is now a member of the Brooklyn Nets with Kevin Durant. Everybody can recognize that Kyrie Irving destroyed the culture of this locker room, and he destroyed Danny Ainge's plan. Everybody can look at that, okay? So, but I also do look at Danny Ainge. I'm not blaming Danny Ainge for what happened this year with Kyrie Irving, but just in general, is it time to kind of recalibrate Danny Ainge, the general manager, Danny Ainge, the president of basketball operations, if you will? Is Danny Ainge overrated as a GM? 617-779-7937. Because, all right, I understand it. He fleeced the Brooklyn Nets years ago now, 2013, so about 6 years ago. He fleeced the Brooklyn Nets. He sent them Paul Pierce, and he sent them Kevin Garnett. And Kevin Garnett, we knew at that particular point in time, was washed up. And quite frankly, we knew that Paul Pierce had a little bit left, but he was never going to be a star caliber player again. And remember, you only kept Paul Pierce in Brooklyn for 1 year if you were the Nets. So anyway, and he only had 1 year remaining on his contract. So it was an absolute fleecing. You took advantage of a new owner in Mikhail Prokhorov, Billy King, who was basically told to do everything Prokhorov said. He wanted stars, and I guess Garnett and Pierce were still considered to be stars at that particular point in time. But this is a Celtics team that, remember, had just lost to the New York Knicks in the postseason with Carmelo Anthony. Like, the only recent playoff series the New York Knicks have won was over that old Celtics team where the expiration date had already been done with, okay? That Celtics team was sticking together, you would even argue, maybe a year too long, and Danny Ainge still pulled off the great trade there where he fleeced the Nets. But that was more about the Nets' incompetence than it really was about Danny Ainge, because nobody else on the open market was offering any kind of deal like that. Because the thing that I've heard about Danny Ainge, the perception of Danny Ainge is this Danny Ainge trader, right? Trader Danny. He's a risk taker, right? All that different type of stuff. And I just look at Danny Ainge's resume, and I just don't see the big risks that Danny Ainge has taken as a GM. I don't see him. Okay, you go back to 2007. When the Celtics don't end up winning the lottery or even getting the number two pick, right? Because at that particular point in time, it looked as if it was a two-player draft, right? You had Greg Oden coming out of Ohio State, and you had Kevin Durant coming out of Texas. And everybody thought there was a fall-off after that. Remember, and it was like Mike Conley and Al Horford after that. Good players, but people didn't hold them in the same regard as they held Durant and Greg Oden. And quite frankly, Greg Oden, I don't consider that guy a bust. It was injuries. Bust is somebody that is like Jamarcus Russell. That's a bust, okay? With Greg Oden, I still believe that guy would have been a great player. But nonetheless, I don't want to get in a whole tangent there. But you know that those are the top two players in the draft. So the Celtics were hoping to get one of those picks, right? So the Celtics were hoping to get one of those picks, and it ends up that they don't get either one of those picks. So at that particular point in time, Danny Ainge has to basically pivot and figure out what he's going to do long term with his organization. And what he decides to do is trade for Ray Allen. And you're thinking to yourself at the time, all right, maybe this is a little bit of a risk because you're giving up a draft pick, which is fifth overall at the time. And okay, but what else are you really giving up? Delonte West to get Ray Allen. Okay, maybe that's a risk at the time because Ray Allen and Paul Pierce doesn't make you that good. But you knew there was a master plan that eventually Ray Allen was the piece that was going to attract Kevin Garnett to waive his no trade clause and become a member of the Celtics. You knew that was your plan all along. And even if it didn't work out, well, guess what? Ray Allen and Paul Pierce together could have been a decent team, and you could have traded both those guys because Ray Allen was still at that point one of, if not the best shooters in the league, and Paul Pierce was still in his prime. So you could have spun Ray Allen down the road for more assets coming back your way. Okay, so I never thought that was a risk, and obviously the Garnett trade's not a risk whatsoever because you bring in the best defensive power forward slash center at that particular point in time. The debate was between him and Tim Duncan in terms of the best player at that position, okay? And I would argue that Garnett at that time was a better defender than Tim Duncan was. Okay, so that wasn't a risk. So what are the moves that Danny Ainge has made that were so risky? Getting rid of Paul Pierce and getting rid of Kevin Garnett, nobody thought the Nets won that trade at the time, okay? So then you think about some of the other moves he made. The Kyrie Irving trade wasn't a big risk. You were trading away Isaiah Thomas, who you did not want to sign to a maximum contract, okay, and one lottery pick that you knew was going to be somewhere between 5 and 10 because you knew the Nets weren't going to be so awful that year. So you give up one lottery pick and a guy that is damaged goods in Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder that is nothing more than a role player to bring in Kyrie Irving, who still had 2 years remaining in his contract and who had recently won an NBA championship and had performed at a high level. So that wasn't a risk. Okay, you think about some of the other major trades. He goes back from 1 to 3 in the draft when he decides to take Tatum over Markelle Fultz and picks up an additional draft pick. Now, that's a great trade, but it's not a risk because Danny Ainge knew the whole time that he was going to be able to get Jason Tatum with the 3rd overall selection because he knew the dumbass Lakers were taking Lonzo Ball with the 2nd overall pick. So that wasn't exactly a trade that took a lot of risk. So I always think that this image of Danny Ainge or this perception of Danny Ainge, like, oh, Trader Danny, he's up to something, really? What kind of risk has he really taken? Like, a risk would have been saying, all right, Kawhi Leonard has 1 year remaining on his contract. He's coming off an injury, but I know Kawhi Leonard, in terms of when he's at the top tier of his game, he's one of the best three players in the world, okay? I know he's that good. A risk would have been a guy on a one-year contract giving up Jaylen Brown, a top-tier prospect, to bring in a Kawhi Leonard. That's a risk, okay? That would have been a risk, but Danny Ainge never made a deal like that. Trading some of your younger players for Paul George, that would have been a risk when he only had a year remaining on his contract. Like the deal that the Oklahoma City Thunder made to acquire Paul George, that was a risk for the Oklahoma City Thunder because there was a chance. Remember, Paul George had publicly said that he wanted to be a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. So that was a risk. But as it pertains to Danny Ainge, he's not taking a ton of risks as he's been the president of basketball operations of the Boston Celtics. Give me the move that you think, oh, that's really risky. The only one I look at is maybe the Ray Allen one. But again, that was all part of a plan where you thought, okay, if I get Ray, that's going to allow me to convince Kevin Garnett to waive his no trade clause and come over to the Boston Celtics. And even if it doesn't work out, Ray Allen's somebody that at the next trade deadline, you could have dealt because everybody in the NBA is always looking for shooting. So just from an asset standpoint, it made a lot of sense. So I just don't see the situation where Danny Ainge has taken all these risks. By the way, we got some breaking news. Nick, so who's got this
breaking
one?
Breaking news. This is breaking news on Sports Radio WEEI.
Okay, man. So now we have figured out who the mystery team was. Okay, so now it's all coming together. Okay, so the first one from Adrian Wojnarowski. Miami is finalizing a sign-and-trade with Philadelphia to acquire Jimmy Butler. So Jimmy's leaving Philly. He's going to Miami. And how about this? 5-time All-Star Al Horford has agreed to a 4-year, $109 million deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. Adrian Wojnarowski has this on Twitter right now. Now, they've already signed Tobias Harris to a max contract. So Jimmy Butler's on his way to Miami, and the Philadelphia 76ers are picking up Al Horford. I got to tell you, this sucks. This really sucks. Like, out of all the teams I didn't want Al Horford to go to, this is either one or two on the list. I didn't want to see him playing with LeBron James in Los Angeles with the Lakers because that would just suck. Like, if Al actually won a championship and it was with LeBron, I mean, that would just not be fun to watch. But now he's going to Philadelphia, one of your arch nemesises, if you will, in the Eastern Conference. So it's going to be Al Horford, Joel Embiid, and you have Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris now back in the fold, but you lose Jimmy Butler. Now, in terms of Philadelphia, we would all agree this is a net loss, right? Because Jimmy Butler last year in the postseason for them, he was their best player. Like, if you look at that Toronto series, where Philadelphia gave Toronto its best series, right? They went seven games, and they needed Kawhi Leonard to hit that crazy shot that bounced like three different places on the rim. So they gave them an actual series, and Jimmy Butler was the guy that was running their offense. They were running everything through Jimmy Butler. So Jimmy Butler says, nah, I don't want to be here anymore, and you bring in Al Horford. Because now if you look at it, who do they have for creators and finishers, right? We know that Embiid can get it done in the post. We know that Al's a pick-and-pop guy. But now you're depending on Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons to be like the engines of the offense, if you will. So now you're asking Ben Simmons to be like the number one guy again in terms of the ball handlers, because Tobias Harris is a completely overrated player. Okay, he had like one good season in Los Angeles. He's not somebody that creates his own shot. He's not somebody that dominates a basketball game. He became the fourth option in Philadelphia. So this is a net loss for Philadelphia. A net loss. It's a decent recovery when you lose Jimmy Butler and you pick up Al Horford. But in terms of what they were last year, in terms of how they wrapped up the postseason, when you look at it in terms of you had Butler and you had Joel Embiid, who looked like they were forming a great tandem going forward, now you put Al Horford in for Jimmy Butler. And I get it's not exactly a position for a position change, but to me today, Philadelphia took a step back. But with all that being said, Philadelphia, you look at the Eastern Conference, they're still a legitimate threat because Milwaukee got worse today. Milwaukee lost Malcolm Brogdon, right? He's going to the Indiana Pacers, so Milwaukee on paper got worse. And man, doesn't Milwaukee now regret that move they made? Where the first guy out of these free agents they had coming up, the first guy they signed was Eric Bledsoe, who became a liability in the postseason that they couldn't play against the Raptors. And Malcolm Brogdon was their second best player in that series. So they chose, in the middle of the season, to re-sign Eric Bledsoe, okay? Instead of now having the ability to re-sign Malcolm Brogdon, because they can't match this now. They re-signed Chris Middleton to pretty much a max contract, right? About 5 years, $178 million. They're bringing back Brooke Lopez on a four-year, $52 million contract, and you lose Malcolm Brogdon instead of losing Eric Bledsoe, which would have been the much more beneficial thing for the Bucks going forward. But the Bucks, nonetheless, you still get the best player in the Eastern Conference besides Kawhi. If Kawhi stays in Toronto, you still get Giannis Antetokounmpo. You still got Brooke Lopez, who had a great year. You still have Chris Middleton, who I get it didn't play well against the Raptors, but still a pretty good team there in Milwaukee. But overall, they got worse. And I would argue that Philadelphia got worse. So if there's a silver lining in everything that's gone on, everything that has transpired from a free agency perspective for the Celtics, is you have all these other teams that are getting worse. Now, the Nets got better, but how much better did they really get? Yeah, they got Kyrie Irving, but you look at it in terms of Kevin Durant, he's definitely not playing basketball this year, okay? So they're not going to be significantly better than they were a year ago. We know what Kyrie Irving gets you as the best player, right? It gets you the fourth or the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference, and you can make an argument that you look at the supporting cast that Kemba Walker has in Boston, you can make an argument that it's better than the supporting cast than Kyrie Irving has in Brooklyn right now. So I guess that's the one silver lining you take, is most of these teams in the Eastern Conference are actually getting worse. And you also look at the fact is we don't know what's happening with Kawhi Leonard. He's like the one guy that hasn't signed yet. Now, Klay Thompson as well, but he's like the one guy that hasn't signed yet. So if he leaves the East gets even weaker than it is now. This is what I don't understand, though. Does Jimmy Butler just hate the world? Does he just hate everybody? I mean, I really don't understand this guy. So he's in Chicago. He's got issues with the younger guys on the team. He goes to Minnesota. He plays with Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, that group of guys. He has issues with all them. And everybody remembers going back to what happened in Minnesota, where he was in a situation where he took some of the young guys, the reserves, and he beat the starters. Like, he beat Karl-Anthony Towns, etc., in like a scrimmage or whatever. And he said essentially that, you can't win without me. That's what he told the owner and the general manager. So he wants out of there. He gets to Philadelphia. And apparently when he gets to Philadelphia, he has an issue with Brett Brown, to the point where in a film session, he was just undressing Brett Brown. And multiple sources confirmed that it was like an uncomfortable situation, if you will, in terms of the interaction. It wasn't a normal coach-player interaction. So he was uncomfortable and didn't like Philadelphia. And I actually thought going down the stretch of the season, you look at that Philadelphia team, it seemed like Jimmy Butler was actually finding his groove, because it kind of became his team in the postseason, right? Because Joel Embiid was dealing with all these injuries, if you will. He had a knee injury, and then he had like some weird illnesses. He had a respiratory infection, and then he had a digestive issue. But it seemed like Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid were getting along, and Jimmy Butler was becoming like the main guy, the main engine of that offense. And now he doesn't like Philadelphia. And now Jimmy Butler's on his way to Miami to do what? Who the hell is he playing with Miami? That team sucks. Okay, they didn't even make the playoffs last year. And all of a sudden he wants to go to Miami. I'm guessing it's because of his relationship with Dwayne Wade. But my God, I don't know what makes Jimmy Butler tick. And there's no surprise that Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving are friends, right? They're apparently really good friends. This now makes a lot of sense that Jimmy Butler wants to go to Miami. I don't know what the hell Jimmy Butler wants, just like I don't know what the hell Kyrie Irving wants. So now you look at the Eastern Conference, man. This thing is just, it's coming apart at the seams. Like, all these different guys are just changing locations. This night is incredible. Now, the whole Al Horford thing, I'm wondering this from Al Horford's perspective. You just went from a situation in Boston, right, where the locker room was a complete mess. You were dealing with the Kyrie vibes, if you will. You were dealing with the issues that Kyrie had with some of the young guys, et cetera, et cetera. Kyrie had issues with Brad Stevens. You were dealing with all that. What does Al Horford think he's getting himself into in Philadelphia? You know you're going to have massive issues in terms of the locker room there, right, in Philadelphia, because you're going to now have Jimmy Butler out of the picture, but you have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and now Tobias Harris. And if you look at Ben Simmons, he's somebody that obviously is going to be upset with the situation that he was in last year based on the fact that in the playoffs, they basically asked him to just be a defender and did not have control of the basketball, right? So Brett Brown is somebody that's been criticized multiple times there in Philadelphia for some of the coaching decisions that he's made. So Al Horford's going into another locker room situation that isn't stable whatsoever. Isn't stable whatsoever. Al Horford's decided, I think I'll go to Philadelphia. Like, you would think if you're Al Horford, after being in the situation you were this year, after going through everything you went through with the Celtics this year, all the drama, that you would want to go to a place where there is a nice ethos with the organization, where there's a nice culture with the organization. Instead, you decide to go to Philadelphia to play with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and all that comes with that, and especially considering that Brett Brown, we know heading into the season, is on the hot seat. But the Philadelphia 76ers, kind of a mess, too. You think about what they've done in terms of free agency. They gave up major assets at the trade deadline, or really way before the trade deadline, for Jimmy Butler, and he just walks out. And Tobias Harris is somebody that you overpaid for in a trade. And now, basically, you double down on your mistake if you're Philadelphia. You should have never given up multiple first-round picks and Landry Shamet for Tobias Harris to begin with. And then you basically double down on your problem by giving this guy a max contract. So now Tobias Harris is going to be somebody that's going to want more touches. It just feels like, to me, this situation with the Philadelphia 76ers, this is going to be a team that implodes. And it seems like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, too. It seems like there was kind of a back and forth between them over the past couple of years of whose team is it. Ben Simmons was the number one pick. We know Joel Embiid is the all-star, and clearly Joel Embiid is the better player at this particular point in their careers. But it seems like that's a toxic situation. And Al Horford, I look at it from when he was here, there was a toxic situation in the locker room and he didn't step up and do anything about it, right? He didn't end any of the drama with Kyrie and the other guys on the team, or Kyrie and Brad Stevens, in terms of clearly there was friction between those two parties. So Al Horford's going to go into Philadelphia as like the good vet, so to speak. And he's going to be the guy that helps keep this locker room under control. Good luck with that one, man. Because the other vet that was on that team, J.J. Redick, decided, I'm good here. I'm going to go to New Orleans. I'm going to go play for the Pelicans. So now you look at it, Al Horford going to be a Philadelphia 76er. It does suck, though, man, that he's going to be on the Sixers. Oh, God. I cannot stand that team. I can't stand Embiid. I can't stand Simmons. And now Al Horford is going to Philadelphia, leaving Boston to join the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, I don't know how anybody can think this is a good couple of weeks for the Celtics. Because even if you think, all right, this doesn't make Philadelphia a championship contender, you can't tell me you like seeing the guy that is considered to be one of your best players for the past 3 years, if not your best overall player the past 3 years. I mean, Kyrie was the best player, but all the different stuff that Al Horford does. All right, so he's been your second best player for 3 years. Let's just say that. You see him going to one of your bitter rivals. Like, this just sucks from a Celtics perspective. This really does suck. This offseason for the Celtics has not been fun whatsoever. And now this capper tonight, that Al Horford's going to be putting on a Philadelphia 76er uniform this year. A 76ers uniform. I don't want to see that whatsoever. So what is Al Horford going to get when he comes back and he's introduced as a Celtic? Do you give him an ovation? Do people cheer for him? Does he get a video tribute for 3 years? Does Al Horford get that treatment, or does Al Horford get booed? What'd you say, Nick?
Kelly Olynyk got a video.
Yeah, you're right. He'll get a video. I mean, if Kelly Olynyk got the video, I mean, you're not setting the bar very high. That is fascinating. Kelly Olynyk got a video. We got to stop with the tribute videos. We know Kyrie's not getting a video, but I'm guessing, yeah, Al Horford will. But, I mean, he signed with Philadelphia. You can't give the guy a video if he signs with a team that we consider to be one of your bitter rivals. Man, and Al Horford went from everybody loved him. That's what I'm going to say about Al Horford. Not going to miss you now, man. I'm really not, because you think about it. He went from a guy that everybody loved, where he couldn't stop the crap that was going on in the locker room, and now he leaves for Philadelphia. I'm done with Al Horford. I was a Big Al guy for years. I'm done with him. I'm done with Al Horford. I'm not a fan of Al anymore. Big Al, because all these years, these 3 years, it got you nothing, okay? You didn't do anything, okay? You didn't solve the locker room issue. So Big Al, supposed to do all the little things. Well, one of the little things you were supposed to do is help out from a leadership perspective, and guess what? You didn't do that, Al Horford, okay? So have fun in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, because I can tell you this, that locker room is going to be a disaster in the coming years. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. If you want to weigh in on the Kemba Walker era about to get underway with your Boston Celtics, and what do you make of Al Horford heading to Philadelphia? I'm not a fan. We'll get into all that, plus trending coming up in just a second here.
The WEEI Sports Radio Network. You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
I was told Boston did go 4 years on an offer, but the money was significantly less than the Philly deal. And to be clear on the Philly deal, $109 million with bonuses. It's $97 million guaranteed, $12 million in bonuses that would be tied to championship. So so the guaranteed money is just under 100, but for Philadelphia, they've transformed their roster again. They did it during the season, bringing in Jimmy Butler. They weren't going to extend Jimmy Butler. They were ready to move away from that experiment. Miami had wanted him back in November and the fall when he was available. Before the trade to Philly, came pretty close to it. They get a deal done tonight. Josh Richardson, I think there's some other players that may be going out through a third team from Miami. But Al Horford and Dave Yeager just said it. A player who can play the four along with Embiid. And if Embiid misses time, you can move Al Horford in there.
All right, that's Adrian Wojnarowski on the newest move for the Philadelphia 76ers. They pick up the now former Celtic, Al Horford. How you feeling about this one? 617-779-7937. Now, if you are going to get rid of Jimmy Butler, I do like that move from Philadelphia's perspective in terms of what they were able to get back from Miami. If you heard Woj there, he said they were able to pick up Josh Richardson. Josh Richardson, really good defender, and he could shoot the basketball. So that's actually a really good fit to pick up for Jimmy Butler. Now, you much rather have Jimmy Butler, but if you have to sign and trade him, and getting Josh Richardson back, that's actually a good fit in Philadelphia, because now you look at that starting five, you're going to have Ben Simmons at the point guard position, and then you're going to have Josh Richardson play two, Tobias Harris at the three, and then Joel Embiid and Al Horford is your front court. Now look at it from a Celtics perspective. How you feeling about your Celtics matching up with that Philadelphia front court? They have Al Horford and Joel Embiid. Who do the Celtics have? Robert Williams, the second-year guy? Who do the Celtics have on the front court to match up with Philadelphia? Now you're looking at bringing in the Robin Lopez's of the world? I mean, good luck. Good luck to the Celtics going up against this team in terms of the front court. Al Horford and Joel Embiid, this is going to be a devastating team defensively. Because, look, I understand Ben Simmons has his shortcomings from an offensive perspective. The guy can't shoot. I still don't understand the whole Ben Simmons thing. Like, they said that he's a real hard worker. What the hell did he work on last summer? Like, if I'm Ben Simmons, all I'm doing is getting in a gym and shooting. His biggest skills are like his passing ability and his size, right? I guess size isn't really a skill, but his biggest attributes, if you will, his best attributes are his passing and his size. Why the hell is Ben Simmons not a better shooter yet? Like, that's all I would be doing. But anyway, from a defensive perspective, you got Simmons out there. Richardson's a really good perimeter defender, like elite level defender. Harris is fine. I mean, he's the weak link of this defense, but he's not like a severe weak link because he's 6'8", so he's fine. And then you have Al Horford, who we all know is a versatile defender, and Joel Embiid. Oh, man, I hate this. I hate that Philadelphia is way better than the Celtics right now. I mean, this really does suck. I don't know how the Celtics are going to contain this front court of Joel Embiid and Al Horford. I mean, the Celtics have no chance in a matchup against these guys in terms of the front court. They will just get completely exposed. Completely exposed. I mean, my God. Al Horford and Joel Embiid in the same front court. Now, Jimmy Butler on his way to Miami, I still don't understand this whatsoever. I don't know. I don't know what Jimmy Butler wants. I really don't. I'm glad that, remember years ago, there was the rumor that the Celtics, not even a rumor, there was like actual conversation that the Celtics could possibly acquire Jimmy Butler in a trade. I'm so happy the Celtics never made that deal. Because think about it. He doesn't like Chicago, doesn't like Minnesota, doesn't like Philadelphia. Now he's in Miami. Eventually, he's not going to like Miami. He's going to have an issue with South Beach eventually. He doesn't like the weather, apparently. Everybody loves the weather, except Jimmy Butler's going to have an issue with the weather there in Miami. Somehow he'll find a way to complain about something. I'm so glad the Celtics dodged that bullet. I really am glad the Celtics dodged that bullet, because Jimmy Butler would have been a mess here. He would have been like Kyrie Irving, except a little taller. 617-779-7937 is your number. What do you make of Al Horford, now the newest member of the Philadelphia 76ers? Let's get to Johnny's in a car. What's going on, John?
Hey, good evening. Yeah, that's just such a slap in the face of the Celtics organization and Celtics Nation to go to a rival like that. I don't know. I just, you know, feeling bitter right now. Yes, I'm going to miss them, but I just hope that we do better than the Nets and the Sixers, although probably not the Sixers. We're not going to play better than them unless we get some bigs. So where can we go now to get bigs?
I don't know, John. I don't know. I mean, you're looking at guys like the Robin Lopez's of the world. Maybe you swing a deal for a Steven Adams. Maybe you make a trade for a Clint Capella. But what's Houston going to be asking for in terms of Clint Capella? You're not going to give up one of your nice assets for Clint Capella, right? You're not giving up Jaylen. I wouldn't give up Jaylen Brown on that deal. I'm scared the Celtics are going to do something irrational in terms of trading for a big man. But there's not much on the market, and it's not like you have a ton of money to attract like a high-level big man. And quite frankly, there's not a lot of them out on the market.
So did Danny have to renounce Aaron Baines to get any of this happening, or was he really hoping maybe that he would be able to get Horford back? Because now it doesn't make sense.
I think he was hopeful to get Horford back. The whole Baines thing to me, it's funny, and I appreciate the call, John. The whole thing with Baines that sticks out to me is they were talking about, like, all right, if he does opt in like he was and they do decide to trade him, they're going to help him out and, like, trade him to a good team, right? Like, wasn't that supposed to be, like, part of the agreement? I don't know. You would think that, but they end up trading Aaron Baines to Phoenix. Now, Phoenix thinks they're contenders. They think they're contenders right now. They went out and they got Ricky Rubio. They think that's the point guard. They gave Ricky Rubio $51 million. So it's going to be Baines, Ricky Rubio. You got DeAndre Ayton there. You got Devin Booker there. They think they're competing now. Phoenix does. My God. Good luck to the Phoenix Suns. I mean, that's the good thing about the Celtics. It could be worse. You could be the Phoenix Suns and think you're competing for a championship at this particular point in time. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Peter. What's up, Peter?
Not much. How are you tonight? Enjoy your show, by the way.
I appreciate it. What do you got?
You know, I wanted to talk about Danny Ainge. Do you know how long, are you appreciative of when he became general manager? What year?
What year he became general manager? What was it?
Because I just Googled it. He became general manager in 2003.
2003, okay. 2003. Yep.
Okay. Now, I'm not terribly good at math, but 19 minus 3 gets me to, you know, he'll going into his 17th year this year.
Yep.
As GM. In 17 years with the Celtics, he's produced one championship, if I'm not mistaken. What other GM in town would survive with it? That maybe Bruins, you know, because they're the Bruins.
Well, they turned over a bunch.
Yeah, I mean, I just wouldn't have survived it. You know, it wouldn't have done with the Red Sox. It wouldn't have done with the Patriots. So he hasn't done a very good job at GM. And I think, in my opinion, his worst job, you know, and is why he should retire, is in front of us now, because the Celtics are in hell. I mean, they're a team that's not terrible and not good. They're the Milwaukee Bucks of like the early 70s. You can never get out of that hell as long as you're mediocre, but not terrible. And so maybe in my mind, I would be looking at a complete, and now this run, what they did today runs completely, you know, opposite of this. I would have been looking for a complete teardown. I would have gotten rid of Brown and Tatum and, you know, and just move back into doing it over again, because I don't see what hope does that team have to compete with no cap space and no front court to speak
of. Peter,
and 17 wing players.
Yeah, Peter, the point, though, with Tatum and Brown is, aren't those the type of guys you want to build around, a 22 and a 21-year-old? Like, you're hoping to hit on that type of player in the draft, right? Like, I want to see those guys get an opportunity to shine. I agree with you on principle, because I've said it multiple times. I don't like the Kemba Walker thing. He's 29 years old. He's an older point guard. Yeah. So if you're going to sign a guy to a max contract, from my perspective, he's going to put you over the top in the Eastern Conference. Kemba clearly does not do that. So if it's me, I just turn the keys over to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Like, you took them third overall for a reason. You're clearly telling us that you believe they could be potential superstars. So why not just build around those guys? I'm not trying to trade them and do this whole thing again. I want to find out if Tatum and Brown are actual superstar players.
Well, I guess I'm concluded that, maybe, in Tatum's case, maybe he can develop. But we've had Brown now 3 years, and tell me he didn't regress big time last year. I mean, if there was a shot to be taken and hit, then Jaylen Brown reared up to take it. You had very little confidence in him making, and he seldom did. And,
right, Peter, but I thought Jaylen Brown, he was much better in the second half of the season, really from January 1st on. I thought he played much better. And I look at Jaylen Brown. Part of the blame I put on this situation is Brad Stevens, the head coach. Brad Stevens handled him very, very poorly. Brad Stevens was in a position where at the beginning of the year, he took him out of the starting lineup, fine, but then he never gave him the ability to get it back. And Marcus Morris, and I get technically he took, Marcus Smart took Jaylen's job originally, but Marcus Morris played poorly for three months, and he didn't give Jaylen Brown an opportunity to get back into the starting lineup. When he was, for a good stretch of the season, about 6 weeks, he was the second best player on the team. So I put a lot of that on Brad Stevens.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that, and I think there's plenty of blame to go around. But if I were to get back again to Danny Ainge and look at what he has done and what he hasn't done. When were the Celtics, what is their plans on a front court, and why do they continually fail to have, the kind of power bigs up front that used to drive their championship teams? I know Kevin McHale's and Robert Parrish's don't grow on trees, but how weak can they continue to be? Very, and I didn't think Al Horford did, was a power kind of guy. Not that he wasn't a good player, but he wasn't that power kind of guy that, is going to grab 20 rebounds a night and play great D. At least I didn't see him playing like that. And so to me, his greatest failing, Danny Ainge, has been an inability to develop a front court.
He also can't draft him. I mean, he misses on all the big men he drafts. He is not good at drafting big men. And I appreciate the call, Peter, all the way from Olympia, Washington there. You can grab his line at 617-779-7937. That has been an issue with Danny Ainge over the years in terms of the draft. Look at his history drafting big men. Not pretty. Not pretty whatsoever. I'm not saying you need a back-to-the-basket big man that you need to build your team around, but when I look at this Celtics team right now, you need something. Okay, they have nothing in the front court. Oh, well, they'll figure it out in a couple days. All the optimism. What are you optimistic about right now as a Celtics fan? I just don't understand it. I don't understand what you're optimistic about. And I look at the general manager, the president of basketball ops, and Danny Ainge right now. You trust that he's going to do the right thing going forward here? You trust that he's going to be able to fill out this roster? Well, even with Philadelphia taking a step back, right? Because going from having Jimmy Butler in that starting lineup to Al Horford, you're taking a step back. Okay, that's clear. But you're still better than the Celtics. So Philadelphia is still better than you. Milwaukee's still better than you. We'll see what happens with Kawhi and his free agency. If he re-signs with Toronto, they're the clear-cut favorite still in the Eastern Conference. And then I look at a team like Indiana. Oladipo, I understand he's starting the season injured, but he will be back at some point. They took a step forward today. They brought in a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, 6'5" guard that can defend multiple guard positions. He's a 50-40-90 guy. They took a step forward. And we saw Miles Turner for Indiana take a step forward last year, okay? And I understand that you beat them in the postseason, but that was without Victor Oladipo. Now they bring in a combination of Brogdon and Oladipo back to the party next year. Indiana right now is a team that got better. You have not gotten better in this free agency period. You have nobody in terms of your front court right now. And what's the direction of the organization? It seems like to me, by signing a 29-year-old point guard, you're trying to compete for a championship. But I don't get how that fits up with what the rest of the roster looks like. If it was me, I'd scratch it down. I'd build behind Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and see where I go from there. Like, isn't there a reason you drafted those guys third overall? All these other high draft picks in the league are getting the opportunities to prove whether or not they're franchise caliber players. But for whatever reason, the Celtics don't want to do that. I get it when you were planning, all right, it's going to be Kyrie and Anthony Davis maybe. Okay, that makes sense to me because you're using those guys as assets. But now that's over. Take your medicine. You're not winning a championship right now. So what the hell is the point of building around a 29-year-old point guard that doesn't elevate the ceiling of this team? What's the ceiling with Kemba Walker? The second round of the playoffs? I just don't understand the direction of this organization. Do you trust Danny Ainge? 617-779-7937. We'll get back to that in just a second. Brian Barrett with you on WEEI.
93.7 FM. WEEI.
All year last year going into those playoffs, the one guy who can stop you is Al Horford. Yeah. And guess what?
He's your teammate now.
There you go.
Well, I think it says a lot, too. I mean, I think you kind of touched on what's going on with the Celtics in that locker room. Because I think if it wasn't for LeBron and the Lakers dominating last year's headlines and every single channel and everything, we would have heard a lot more about the disconnect that there was in that locker room between the young guys and Kyrie. And probably Al Horford probably sat back knowing who he was. Like, man, I'm not at the point in my career where I want this. I want to win and I want to be in the right situation. So, like Ramona said, Boston probably could have did something similar to that, but I just think that was more of Al wanting to get out of there.
All right, that's Matt Barnes on the Al Horford situation. One thing I would disagree with him on is not just locally, but nationally. He does realize, like, the Celtics were talked about every day for the Kyrie drama. Like, that was a national headline all the time, not just locally. So we weren't just talking about LeBron and the locker room issues there. We were talking about the Celtics issues with Kyrie Irving all the time, not just from a local perspective, but from a national perspective as well. One thing I will say that I do like about this whole Al Horford thing going to Philly is that contract is going to look horrible for them in the final 2 years. $27 million, and he's going to be under contract till what, he's 37 years old? 37 years old. And just from a broader outlook standpoint, if you will, Al Horford and Kemba Walker were not winning you a championship. Just the reality of the situation. They weren't winning you a championship. So at least you dodge one bad contract in this. You don't take on Al Horford. You dodge that contract. But still, I don't understand the Kemba Walker thing whatsoever. I don't really like it. I don't like it. I don't understand where it puts you in the Eastern Conference. Doesn't make you a legitimate contender. If anything, too, it halts the development of Tatum and Brown because I just want to build the offense around those guys and get like a point guard that is a defender slash shooter like a Patrick Beverley or Malcolm Brogdon would have been nice with the timeline. But I would have settled for Patrick Beverley at like $15 million per year, who just played with young guys. He knows his role. He's not going to be the main guy. He's fine with just taking three-pointers and playing defense. Like, that would have been a nice guy for these guys to grow with. All right, let's get to Bob in Connecticut. What's up, Bob?
I'm curious about the money factor. Horford and Kyrie had about $50 million tied up, and then there was Morris, Rozier, and Baines, and another $15 million plus. That's $65 million or more. We're paying $35 of that out to the new guy, Kemba, and leaving about $30 million. Everyone else's salary was part of the formula last year that is remaining on the team. Make me understand where this $30 million, why isn't it there to get a big?
Why isn't the $30 million there to get... Oh, you're talking about why don't the Celtics have $30 million additional dollars?
Yeah, I mean, they dumped $70 million in cap with those five players.
Right, well, here's the issue, Bob, and I appreciate the call. You can grab his line if you'd like at 617-779-7937. You can re-sign your own free agents over the salary cap, right? But you can't inherit new players and sign all these guys over the cap. You have to have their bird rights to sign them over the cap. Like the Golden State Warriors, the reason they can sign Klay Thompson eventually, if they do, it appeared they were going to do that right away, but they haven't. Like, if they're going to sign Klay Thompson, they can go significantly over the cap because Klay Thompson, they have his bird rights. You can't do that in terms of going outside the organization and going over the salary cap, right? You need to be able to have your own guys already in-house. That's why you could do it with your own players, guys that you had the bird rights on, that allows you to sign well over the salary cap as long as the organization wants to pay the luxury tax bill. But because these guys are just out there as free agents, and now Kemba comes in there and that's a $35 million cap hit, you can't just go out and sign another guy that's on the open market to a max level contract. You don't have the space to be able to do that. Now, one thing I'd like to point out real quickly is this. We realize now in the NBA that you have two agencies that are running the league, okay? So we all know that Rich Paul, who is LeBron James's agent, he's running the league because think about what he did. They picked up Anthony Davis as a client, and he wanted to get Anthony Davis with his other client, LeBron James, so they demanded a trade there in New Orleans, and they eventually got him to a position where he's now on the Los Angeles Lakers. And now if we look at the Eastern Conference, similar situation, right? You have Roc Nation, which is Jay-Z's agency, and now who did Kyrie Irving just sign with this offseason? He signed with Roc Nation. Jay-Z used to have an ownership stake in the Brooklyn Nets. Now, he doesn't anymore because he has an agency. But again, Jay-Z was a minority owner of the Brooklyn Nets. And now you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, both Roc Nation clients, both represented by Roc Nation, both playing for the Brooklyn Nets. So you have two agencies right now that are running the NBA. Is that a good thing for the league? Well, Rich Paul is controlling what's going on the West Coast, and apparently Roc Nation's controlling what's going on in the East Coast. Let's get to Rob and Swampski. What's up, Rob? Rob. Okay, Rob. Okay. Advice here. When you call in a radio show, turn down the radio. Okay? That's what you got to do. You got to turn down the radio, or else you're going to be in a delay, and you're not going to hear me talking to you. So you got to turn down the radio when you call in. All right, one other thing before we wrap up here. You know what I was thinking about? Because this is a crazy day, right? Jimmy Butler's going to Miami. Al Horford's in Philly. Terry Rozier is now a Charlotte Hornet. Kemba Walker's a Celtic. Kyrie and Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. Like, all these guys changed teams today. Can you imagine what it'd be like in the NFL if more guys changed teams? Like, who is the biggest free agent in the NFL this year? Like, Nick Foles, right? Nick Foles going from Philadelphia, who wasn't going to be the starter in Philadelphia, to Jacksonville. 2 years ago, like, Kirk Cousins was the biggest free agent. Could you imagine what the NFL would be like if we had, like, real free agency? Like, if these dudes were legitimately on the open market, how fun that would be? Like, not that we would want Tom Brady, but if it was, like, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, all in the same free agency class, like, these guys actually got to free agency, that would be absolutely outstanding. I would love that from the NFL's perspective. One thing the NBA does get right, its NBA offseason is awfully, awfully entertaining. I'll tell you this, tonight has been more entertaining than the entire NBA playoffs, hasn't it? It's been way more entertaining than that. All right, thanks to Nick for producing. I'll talk to you tomorrow night from 6 to 10. Brian Barrett with you tomorrow. I was with you, of course, for the past 5 hours. Had a lot of fun. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.